League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It'll be fine.
We'll blag it.
Yeah. Fine. It's warm in here,
isn't it? Works, does it?
Oh, yeah.
Mate, that beer has gone down an absolute dream.
Well, there's another one there, so we're already
two and a half deep.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 31 of the Tottenham Way Podcast. We are back after the international break and I'm Tom and I'm your host and Dan Kilpatrick is joining us as ever.
Hello mate.
You alright?
I'm very well.
How did you spend your 2 weeks? Chilling? Nothing to do?
I didn't do anything.
No.
I was in London, bored. I hate the international break.
It's awful, isn't it?
No work. It's no fun.
It's good upbeat start to the podcast.
That's basically my life at the moment. Yeah.
The other voice you can hear is Greg Stobart coming back for your second appearance. Greg, how you doing, mate?
I'm very good, thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us. But your life has changed a little bit since last you were with us. What are you doing? What's going on?
Well, I'm about to start a new job working for the England cricket team in digital production for them. And to be honest, I'm quite excited about getting out of football journalism. I've been doing it for 9 or 10 years now, and it's one of those you think it's a dream job when you start. And Dan knows this feeling. Dan's only been doing it for a year, and he knows this feeling. You think it's a dream job when you start, and I absolutely loved it. I've done some amazing stuff, but it's become a job like anything else, really. Now, so time for to do something a bit different. Time for a new challenge, and time to be able to sit back, go to Tottenham, get my season ticket back, and actually enjoy being a Spurs fan again. And I've lost a lot of that, and I've got to say, you know, I see all these journalists going to these games like yesterday, Man City, Arsenal, Man City. I'm not jealous at all, to be honest. I don't think I'm going to miss it that much.
There's a lot of people that listen to this pod who kind of like the idea of possibly going into journalism, particularly football journalism. Why? Like, when does the dream become, you know, apathy? And
I'll tell you the first thing, the industry has changed quite a lot, even since when I started. And now what you've got is every publisher all over the top six clubs and just writing the same old crap, really. You know, Alexis Sanchez does a tweet about his dogs and everyone's got to write a story on it. The news chasing has changed. I think people inside clubs are a lot more wary and suspicious. So those relationships which you spend years nurturing ends up almost in jeopardy because no one trusts anyone anymore. And I feel like more and more, certain at Tottenham's a good example, the people I know at Tottenham, it feels more and more like all I'm doing is taking. I'm not adding any value to them. It's not a relationship anymore. It's just my editor's up my backside because Dan's written something or someone else has written something. And I'm just sending, you know, really naggy text messages or phone calls. And I don't want to be that guy anymore. I don't really care about the gossip anymore. You know, if I hear something, I'll write it. But, you know, part of it's ego as well. So for me, you know, I think this is the thing with a lot of journalists. They like knowing more than other people. And I think I was in that place in my own sort of mindset for quite a long time. You know, I wanted to show off that I know stuff that other people don't know rather than just communicate to people and tell them something they didn't know already. So actually quite nice to get out of that, be able to sit back and if I hear something, I might tweet it or I might tell Dan, but not too bothered, really.
See, these days, every other dickhead's got a podcast. That's the problem, yeah. Dan, isn't it? Hey?
I'm not as cynical as Greg yet, because I've only been doing it for like 18 months, but I think the one thing I can relate to is, as a Spurs fan, you do lose a bit of the love. There's no doubt. Like, my mates used to be able to text me and wind me up so easily about Tottenham. Like, if Spurs drop points, I get like a load of emojis or just a selfie of one of my mates looking smug or something, and I just get be pissed off. Now, I'll be like standing in the mix zone or something, or you're just walking home after the game and you get some abuse. I really don't care. It changes how you feel about the club you support, particularly if that's the only club you're covering, like me. So I can kind of empathise in that it would be nice just to have a Saturday off one day where I could just go to the Antwerp, get quite pissed, go and watch Spurs, go home and not have to worry about doing work or writing a report on the whistle, which means I can't watch the second half or whatever.
So is it kind of
that's the one thing for me.
Is it kind of a case of the access is great, but the actual, in terms of what it does to your lifestyle and stuff like that, isn't, there's the bit that people don't see, and I'm not bringing out tiny violins or anything, but you know, is that the case? Is it just it's not actually as much fun? It's not a case of going to watch football in the same way as a fan would go and watch football.
There's definitely a bit of that. I mean, Dan and I, we had a really good weekend in Manchester for the City game. You know, we stayed in Manchester, did a few beers, but you know, can't have a beer up on the way up because you're working, so it's coffees and sandwiches. You spend the whole of the second half with your head in the laptop, and like you say, that's, you know, that was a great game. That was our comeback from 2-0 down. Mm. Barely saw it. Actually, it's almost a bit annoying that we scored the equaliser because it changes everything you've written or you're going to write. And then it's true though, isn't it?
Yeah,
and then
true.
So you don't see it. You do the press conferences, and you know, as lovely as Pochettino is, seen it enough times now, really, and he doesn't say anything very interesting. And then we don't get to go out for a beer until 2.5 hours after kickoff, after full time. Sorry. Mm.
We were saying this week, actually, to Ben Pearce, who came in the pod a while ago, that we were on the way up to Burnley and we were like, oh, you almost just want like a routine 2-0 because, yeah. as a journalist. Like, as a fan, it'd be great if every game was like the Wickham game or whatever.
Mm.
You know, it'd be great if a lot of games were like the Wickham game. But as a journalist, you just want something that's relatively easy to write about. And that's another consideration that changes how you are as a fan, I think. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, there are the games that kind of make it all worth it. You know, you beat Arsenal at home. If it's this season, it'll be amazing. You know, you beat Arsenal or you win a cup, or, you know, if you're not covering Spurs, for me, Champions League finals, World Cup finals, you're like, okay, that's why I went to boring Arsenal against Burnley or Tottenham against Swansea and sat there and didn't really enjoy it. You know, you do the mundane stuff for those little highs, but
and ultimately I know there are a lot of people that would kill to have the chance to speak to Pochettino and speak to Harry Kane after most games and go to every game for free and get sandwiches and coffee and etc. So there is that,
but as a fan, as I'm a fan,
I suppose the point, I think maybe the point that me and Greg are both trying to make is that actually as a fan, that's not you wouldn't necessarily want that. It's quite nice to still be a fan.
Yeah, a fan would ask Pochettino something totally different to what you guys would to write. You want to write a story. To a fan, it's about getting just something that they'll remember kind of for the rest of their
You've
life.
You've always
of
got
that.
To keep the fans in mind because ultimately you are writing for them.
Yeah.
Like, the majority of people that read stuff about Tottenham are going to be Tottenham fans. So you have got to think. And that's where it's an advantage to be a fan of my job, because you do know what the fans are talking about. You are kind of tapped into that psyche. But you're right in that you can't just be like, Poch, I fucking love you or whatever. You have to put them on, you know, you have to ask difficult questions from time to time.
To which you don't actually get a lot back from what you guys have said about Pochettino before. You don't really get a lot back. So I guess there's a second edge to that, is that you can only do so much as well in your job, because you're doing your job and he's doing his, and that sometimes that clashes and you don't get as much enjoyment as you think you would as a fan. Like, as a fan, if you went to Pochettino and asked about an injury or the next game or something and got the same answer that you guys get every single week, every game is important, he is still weeks away, I'd love that. I'd love a bit of, I'd be like, take that away, and that would be something I'd tell my grandkids, but it's going to be different for you guys, isn't it?
I think that's part of it. Yeah, it's kind of just the football media environment's become quite sterile in that sense. You get the odd really explosive comment. It's not going to be Pochettino.
A lot of
I mean, I think he's good, and Dan will tell you, I'm sure he has before. Off camera, he instantly, as soon as the cameras are turned off, he's really
so
charismatic,
better, yeah.
He's really relaxed. And you can see why the players say he's got this aura and charisma. And if you met him, you would see that, and he'd put his arm around your shoulder and you would see all of that. But it is quite a sterile environment. It's the same kind of stuff. The players are overly media trained, and you know, the ones that as a fan you fall in love with are the ones who show their personality as well. You know, and sometimes your personality is, Harry Kane's quite a boring bloke. You know, he likes golf, his dogs and his family,
NFL.
And training and a bit of New England Patriots. But at least, you know, he expresses who he is. But sometimes,
and he's a superstar as well. Bale was the same. Bale's boring. Bale is incredibly boring as a man, but he was a superstar. So,
but if you,
doesn't
own,
matter what
if you
write,
own being boring, it's okay. Yeah. But it's just when you get players who clearly got quite a lot to say and quite a lot of personality, and press officers and training and all this kind of stuff, and all they end up saying is, it's a Tottenham podcast, but Danny Welbeck's interview after Arsenal Man City yesterday, absolutely rubbish. Like, yeah, it was really, you know, really good character. You know, just all these awful sound bites and cliches. I'm so sick of hearing that from footballers. I'd rather just switch off. And if they've got anything interesting to say, I'll end up stumbling across it anyway. It'll be on Twitter, it'll be on Sky, it'll be somewhere. Because most of the time, and as a journalist, you think it's more important than it actually is. So we'll go into our huddles at a Tottenham press conference and, what's the line? And like all the journalists are sort of, you know, all the journalists are divvying up what they're going to write, what are we going to do for Thursday, what are we going to do for Friday, what are we going to do for Saturday? And no one really gives a shit, really. No one really cares. That is not that much important. It's only important to us. And, you know, the stuff you want to read about, but it just, it's a different world. And you're in your own journalism bubble within the football bubble. And I've just found it a little bit frustrating, really.
That's fair enough. I mean, we've just done 10 minutes on that. That's quite
But also, big. Also, Dan, yeah, no. you get to be a professional fan because all you do is Tottenham. I've ended up going to Man United Liverpool, and I spent half the game with a little stream in the corner of my laptop watching, you know, Spurs against Sunderland.
Good man.
Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
All this can come out now. Yeah. Right, okay, well, let's actually talk about some Spurs. Ben Pearce got his wish. He got a pretty straightforward 2-0 win away from home. Ben Pearce actually went, didn't he? He was up in the gods, and he said he had a whole row to himself.
Ben didn't sit,
he sat in the wrong place.
He didn't sit in the press box. So he was like, I'm going up. And I went up about 10 minutes after him, and he just wasn't there. And I was like, that's a bit weird. He must have been in the loo or something. And he's got this tweet, like, just the game is starting, like, think I'm in the wrong place, no one else here. So he's just sitting on the camera was sort of in the middle of the halfway line. The press box is to the left, and he was, like, the other side of the camera on the other side of Turf Moor.
Oh, right.
So I don't know how he got there, but...
Sounds perfect, to be honest. A nice isolated box at the top.
Yeah. No, yeah. If you've got a seat and a desk and Wi-Fi, then it's... quite nice.
Yeah, absolutely perfect. It's better than the journey there. Apparently there was a... I don't know what you're saying to me, Dan. Dan's trying to signal something to me, soundless, but we're not editing this out, by the way.
I said I thought we were going to start by asking if we could win the title.
All right, well, let's do that then. Well, that win... let's put that win in some context. We beat Burnley 2-0. Obviously, Crystal Palace went to Stamford Bridge from nowhere, 1-2-1, and suddenly... we are 7 points. Is it 7 points?
7 points.
Yep. Out of nowhere, in one weekend, a difficult away game against Burnley to sort of cement top four or help cement top four has turned into a really important win that could springboard us towards the title. So, all right, yeah, let's start on that, guys. What do you think? Where are
Can we do it as a percentage chance? Because realistically, no one can expect us to win the title. I'm saying 10%.
But is that 10% enough for you to get properly excited?
Well, it'll go up to about 50 if the next few games go the way.
Because on Saturday, we're at the early kickoff on Saturday, and by then we could, not saying we will, but legitimately could be 1 point behind Chelsea.
I think we've got 9 games left. I think we need to win 8, which is going to be really difficult when you've got Arsenal and Man United, West Ham.
With West Ham in between. Yeah. And some tricky away games as well, like Palace.
Yeah, Palace will be hard. But I think we need to win 8, and we need Chelsea. We need a mini collapse, don't we? And
I'm a bit more. I've looked at Chelsea's fixtures, and I'm a bit more optimistic in the next 3 games.
Well, that's what three games is the one we need 9 points, and we need to get 5.
We do this every year, but I mean, I've looked ahead at the fixtures, and I mean, I don't know if you agree, but there's no way that Mourinho is losing to Chelsea at Old Trafford. No way. So that's at least a draw. Mm-hmm. He's going to at least get a draw from that. So even if they beat City on Wednesday, which I think they might well do, because City's defence is horrible. So even if they beat City on Wednesday, which is by no means guaranteed, then I think it could be down to 5 by the time... they play United, assuming Spurs can get a couple of results, which is a big assumption. But suddenly, you know, 5 points in the final seven games, they'll be feeling. I think they'll be feeling the pressure if Spurs can win the next two.
It's worth saying as well that this time last year we were in almost an identical position. We were chasing from quite a way behind, and it wasn't until the Chelsea game was at the start of May, wasn't it? We were still actually 7 points behind. Even West Brom, we were always looking at it being almost an impossible chase. So we are in a very similar position this year. It's worth saying. But we did kind of play our best football. My memory immediately goes to the Stoke game away last year when we won 4-0. We do kind of have it in us to have this chase in us until it's... And after Chelsea, we collapsed completely. So I guess my question here is, in light of what Lloris said today, I think it was today or yesterday, there were some quotes that came out about him saying, I'm still looking over my shoulder.
It was in Burnley he said that.
Oh, it was in Burnley. Yeah. So he's obviously saying the title's not done, but he's very realistic in saying we need to kind of look over our shoulder. And that's the club captain saying that. I guess, are you on board with the let's not get too invested just in case? Because it can happen again.
I think Lloris always says stuff like that after a big win. Like his message after a big win in the mix zone or to the broadcast media is always calm down, keep the feet on the ground. I think he sees that as his kind of responsibility as captain to keep everyone calm. And actually, Lloris is much better to speak to when Spurs have had a bad defeat, because like in Monaco, he was like, this isn't good enough. It needs to be better. I think after Liverpool defeat, he was like, oh, I heard we were playing for the title, but it didn't look like that. So actually, oddly enough, Lloris is the man you kind of want to speak to when Spurs have lost. But we spoke to him on Saturday after a really good win. So his message was very much stay calm, focus on getting the top four. Then once Champions League qualification's guaranteed, then you can start thinking about the title.
Fair enough.
I think that's sort of fair enough. Given what happened last year when it was like Spurs put everything they had into winning the title, which is fair enough.
You should rightly do it.
Yeah, of course. But then as soon as that possibility was over, they just mentally completely went. Well, if you believe Pochettino, it was all mental and not physical.
I think it definitely feels almost easier this year to chase them down, in that everyone wanted Leicester to win last year. It was a whole fairy tale thing. The pressure's on Chelsea this time, really. They can lose it, whereas last time it was us trying to chase them down, really. And I've been watching Chelsea, and I think they'll just about hold on. I think, especially with Conte as their manager, if they play in his image, they'll grind out those 1-0s. But they've had a lot of those. The difference is we had that period in October when November,
and we
still haven't got Kane, but we're drawing loads of games, and they've just always managed to, you know, 1-0 against West Brom at home, beat Stoke in the last minute away, 1-0 away at Crystal Palace, and we're just a couple of games short of doing that. But Costa has been absolutely dreadful since the China stuff in January, and I know a few Chelsea fans who are saying that Palace result was coming, and they've got, you know, even Southampton at home will go there, and if they are wobbling, Southampton can easily go there and get.
Didn't they beat them last? I know last season was totally different, but Southampton went there last season and won, didn't they?
And Bournemouth beat them last season. They've got Bournemouth at the weekend as well.
It's on, lads. Yeah, it's on.
Stop it.
Gonna smash it.
But we also need Kane and Danny Rose. Back in time for Arsenal.
Well, of course. Definitely. You know, we always need our best players. But a result like Burnley, and I think we should talk about Burnley specifically as the game itself, but that was impressive to do what we did. And we were without Rose, without Walker and without Kane from the start. And in the first half, we lost Wanyama and lost Winks as well. Dembele was clearly not 100% after playing in Russia, I think, for Belgium on Tuesday or Wednesday. Son had travelled to Saturn and back or something for South Korea. Yeah. You know, we were well under strength, like a long way under strength. More under strength than Arsenal were or Chelsea or City were when they went to Burnley. And they all either scraped results or I think Chelsea drew. So I'd see it as that. I actually think it's a psychological boost as much as anything else as well to go there and didn't play particularly well but come away with a 2-0 result.
Yeah, don't disagree with that. I think the big thing about Burnley, I saw a stat before the game that basically whoever scores first at Turf Moor wins. So when they've conceded first, they actually have tended to go on to lose. So I think the teams that scored first was the Swansea, Arsenal and City. And they were the ones who won. And when Burnley score first, they just don't concede after that. Or they tend to score another one and then it's too late. So I felt like the first goal was going to be really crucial. And at half-time, just Winks was being sort of stretched down the tunnel and Sissoko had just come on. And you knew Chelsea were down. And it all felt like this was a classic opportunity that Spurs were going to fuck up. This is like, that's what Spurs do. Chelsea lose and then Spurs draw or lose at Burnley. That's just what happens. So to do what they did in the second half, particularly changing back to the formation, which has tended to kind of stifle the attacking play rather than bring out the best in it as it did at times of last season, it was really impressive. And I thought I felt like it was kind of just a couple of moments of quality. Like I thought Dyer's finish didn't get nearly enough credit.
Yeah,
like
great
properly,
finish. Yeah.
He probably like took his time, like 2 seconds, and finished it like a striker.
He went into the side netting.
Yeah, it was a really good moment of like composure. And then Ali's ball for this, Eriksen's pass, and then Ali's pass for the second goal didn't get enough chat either because they were both pinpoint and absolute quality, and they made it look easy. And I think that was really significant that the Spurs just sort of exerted their superior quality over Burnley in the end and got the result.
Greg, anything more?
I can't really argue with any of that. I thought second half, I mean, losing Wanyama and Winks, horrible, and you'd expect that's Winks' season done, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Poch more or less said it is today.
And you're right about the formation change, but what I would say is, I mean, Winks, we don't really have anyone else. You would have said we don't really have anyone else who can do that Winks' job, just shifting the ball in midfield. I thought Dyer was absolutely brilliant in the second half.
Let's talk about Dyer, because Dyer was in the news, albeit gossip, but he was in the news over international break. Because he played in midfield again for England, and that's obviously where he played last season. And, well, has he said anything to this effect about him rather playing in midfield? Because the talk is of United offering £40 million, and if they were signing him, they would play him in midfield.
Yeah,
that's
he's been
talk,
asked it like 100 times, and he always says, I'm happy to play. But it just kind of goes back to what Greg was saying at the start. He's just always
I'll play
says,
where the manager
I'm happy to play where the manager wants me.
He wants to play midfield.
Because with Dyer, he's almost a victim of how good we are at 3-4-3 because he still played a couple of games at central defensive midfield, but Wanyama's form is just, you can't displace him. And I think we've shown in a couple of games this season that you can't play him together in centre mid. And why would you drop Dembele as well? Or for that matter, Winks if he was fit.
I want to talk about Pochettino's press conference, not today, but the one on Thursday where he said all that stuff about Dyer. Because I think it was, you could definitely read it as a kind of rebuke to Dyer because he basically was asked about him, what's his best position? And he went on a bit of a rant and just kind of listed a chronological history of Dyer at Tottenham saying, well, we signed him as a young player from Sporting and he played in defence and then right back and then for the first season. And then I decided to move him into midfield. And he was brilliant, and then I decided to move him back into defence. And to me and to most people there, to be fair, it was basically him saying, listen, mate, you owe me your career. Don't forget that. Don't forget that the only reason you're being linked to Man U as a midfielder is because I decided to put you there. And don't forget the only reason you're in the England squad is because I had faith in you and put you in the team for the first game against West Ham and you scored a goal and the rest is history. So I don't know anything at all, but I do wonder whether behind the scenes Dyer's a bit kind of agitated about not playing in midfield, particularly because he should be England's starting centre midfielder in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, the way things are going. But if he spends another year in defence, you know, can Southgate do that?
I think a lot of it's the options as well. He's a victim of his own versatility, really. Mm. And there aren't really the other, if you're going to play a three, Carter Vickers probably isn't ready. You think next season's the year he'll be playing in the Premier League. Wimmer's just gone, you know, doesn't want to play Ben Davis there. So he's the only option. If you don't play Dyer in a three, you're going to have to go back to a four as they did.
But
I think there's a really strong case, though. The second half kind of made me realise this, that 4-2-3-1 hasn't really worked this year.
because Wanyama's.
Yeah, but is it just because we haven't been playing Dyer there?
And it seems
and
like
when
it,
Dyer
yeah.
basically, when you play Dyer there, you can do either formation because he drops back. And that's another thing Pochettino said. He was like, well, you know, Dyer played there and I found this position for him that means with the ball, he plays a defender. Without the ball, he plays as a midfielder and it really worked for him. I was like, well, you obviously acknowledge this, but then it's quite weird that Wanyama is clearly the favourite in that midfield role.
He's been great.
But he can't do that. He doesn't drop nearly as well.
And when you think of Dembele, for all of his good points and attributes, he can't really pass the ball particularly well. And that's not what Wanyama's particularly known for either, but Dyer is a really good passer. And that's something that he does add to the game in the middle of the park, and something that was quite obvious when we were playing Burnley on Saturday.
And it was obvious when he was playing for England during the international break as well. It's those 15-yard passes in between the lines to find Dele Alli on the half turn, to find Eriksen. That's what or Lamella last year. He was always popping those balls off. You miss Lamella, don't you?
Yeah. Love the man.
But that's what he does, and he can drop it into defence. And I love Wanyama. He's up there for player of the year this season. But there is an argument that there's slightly better balance against the weaker teams. You'd always want Wanyama and Dembele playing against Chelsea or Arsenal or Man United. But there is an argument that against the weaker teams, you put Dyer in there with Dembele or Winks. Actually, you've got more progressive passing in there and actually a better balance.
I feel like what I was going to say, see, Dan, you wrote an article in International Break about the squad ladder, about who's the most important player at the moment. This was a couple of weeks ago now, but Dyer was 11th in that, and it was kind of the first. I'm not saying he shouldn't be.
No.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't have been. But what I mean in the 3-4-3, I think Dyer is the most replaceable player we've got in the 3-4-3, in the formation. But
yeah, I think you'd have to say that, wouldn't you?
Out of the 11,
yeah.
But I feel like he's one of the most difficult players you could replace in a squad. I don't think we could find another Dyer. You can't find another centre-back, central defensive midfielder and emergency right-back.
The thing is, it's strange with Dyer because at the moment, let's say Spurs had to sell someone for 40 or 50 million in the summer and it was between Dyer, Alli, Kane, Rose and Walker, you'd probably pick Dyer, wouldn't you? But then
it would break my heart.
He's young as well.
Yeah, but
yeah.
That's only because he's been playing. But at the end of last season, it wouldn't have been Dyer.
It's
kind of only because he's been playing in defence, and I don't think he's quite as good a player as he is in midfield.
Yeah,
it is tricky. I think I almost want to see Wanyama not quite fit for Swansea and Dyer back in there. It would just be interesting in a 4-2-3-1 just to see him and Dembele back together again, because I did like that at the end of the Burnley game. It was really good to see them together. And as great as Wanyama's been, those two were so good last year. It felt like it was a midfield combination with like a little bit of everything. Like loads of strength. You've got Dembele's kind of dribbling and flair. They can both pass the ball a bit. I think Dyer's a bit better. And it felt really well balanced for Spurs. And then,
getting the band back together.
Yeah, but then it's weird. I was saying the other day, like, I remember after Pochettino's first season, it was like, you'd never have said Bentaleb won't be in the team next year. You're like, he's the man. And after last season, you'd never have said Dyer won't be in the But then Wanyama came in and he's like, he's finds these really inventive ways of refreshing it every year that you just can't predict. Like next year, there could be someone totally random in there instead of Wanyama. And
Sissoko.
We can't see it.
Let's move on because we've been bogged down a little bit. Son got his 15th goal of the season. Obviously scored our second. Lucas Sarkalis, sorry I butchered that, @lob_star. Is Son better as an impact sub or starting? No impact versus Southampton at home when he started, but instant impact versus Burnley away. Is he another one that's kind of a victim of his own success in what he does in a way? You know, he's not a starter in that 3-4-3, but you can't really argue with the stats of when he does come on and change his games.
He's a great squad player if he can accept the role. He played plenty of games this season. That's why he scored 15 goals. He's too erratic to play in the first choice team, I think. You can't really trust him. And in the big games, in those key moments, will he pick the pass? Will he make the right decision? You see Alli in particular, how frustrated he always gets with Son because he makes bad decisions. and then he'll just pop one in the top
corner. Pissed off about 2 minutes before Son scored, didn't
he?
Yeah,
because
he went over and apologised during the celebration, didn't he?
So. But and he is I find him frustrating as well, because he'll try and take someone, he'll drop a shoulder and try and take someone on when there's a good pass on, or he'll shoot from an impossible angle when there's a cross on. And he's obviously being coached, because we know how Pochettino coaches the players, but if he can iron out some of that decision making, he might even be pushing for a start. But they're exactly the players you need. You know, you don't win trophies without players like that. I mean, it'd be horrible if he left, because we've seen what we've done with our transfer strategy in the last couple of years. You need him. You need him playing in the cups. You need him coming on as a sub, and he's made an impact. You know, a few times this season as well, he's come on and made an impact. Even when he started, he's done it a couple of times. I don't think he's anywhere near the starting 11, but certainly, you know, you think forward to Swansea, the way I don't think Janssen did anything on Saturday. You would think Son will be straight back in the team, and he can do a job as a squad player, and that's exactly what you want from him.
How long do you think it is before Son starts to think, well, I could start for 75-80% of clubs in Europe, maybe?
We read the Standard a few weeks ago. Sounded a lot like an agent story about him having interest from Italy and Spain, so I suspect he's already feeling a bit underappreciated. But I think the problem is exactly what you said. Like, whenever he comes on as a sub, he does really well and like scores or wins a penalty or something, and then he earns a start and he's not good enough.
And yeah,
so it does feel a bit like that with him. But I agree with Greg. Like, for the money Spurs could sell him for, there's no one really they could buy better. They could buy who would get the 15 to 20 goals he's going to finish the season with.
I think what I like about him is, I think our first choice starting 11, as good as it is, it's a little bit one-paced, and he's quick and he can go in behind. And Ali does it when he's playing in the number 10, but generally we don't have the searing pace. We don't have a winger really.
Mm.
So actually that's why he comes on with 20 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go against a tired team. Maybe when we're ahead and the other team are starting to chase and there's a bit of space in behind. He's perfect for that, and he can take his chance and he put goals on the plates for others. But as a starter, I think he gets a bit stifled and he runs out of space and he finds it difficult.
He's like that player that is crap when he's got loads of time. Like when he's clean through one-on-one.
Yeah, he has to think, like
against
Monaco.
Yeah. But when he's got a split second, he'll scorpion kick it into the top corner or something.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's just, he is what he is, and I think he's great, and
he's kind of football purgatory.
He's always going to be the kind of 12th or 13th man, given his versatility. But yeah, I kind of agree that when everyone's fit, it's not really a question for me whether he should be in there. He shouldn't.
Yeah,
he should be the 12th or 13th.
Fair. Yeah. The last things to really talk about, we touched on it a little bit earlier, but Wanyama and Winks. What's the latest on Wanyama first? Because he apparently walked past the press office. Press conference and gave a thumbs up to you guys or something like that.
Yeah, I think he's a doubt for Wednesday, but he might play. I don't think he trained today.
And Winks, you said that Pochettino said
he is probably out. Well, he's going to be out for the season.
But did he give any indication of what it actually was? Because
ankle ligament damage.
Yeah, it looked like a broken leg, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It's a massive shame, and I do think we're going to miss him.
He's at Hotspur Way kind of hobbling into a car on crutches in a big boot earlier.
Pochettino is heartbroken, isn't he, about it? Yeah, you saw the reaction against Burnley. There was a video doing the rounds on Twitter that I think you retweeted.
Yeah.
And he gets the news. This is half... I think the game may have been won by then, maybe.
No, Pochettino was really weird at half-time. He went into the dressing room for literally a few minutes, and then he came out with the whole staff and spent the rest of half-time sitting in the dugout.
Okay.
It was quite odd. So I was afterwards, I was sort of...
Yeah, did anyone ask?
I asked, I didn't go to his presser, but then because I was in the mix zone, so I asked Vertonghen and Lloris, like, what did the manager say at half-time? And they both said, like, oh, we don't like to talk about the dressing room, but I think he pretty much walked in. They both said he told us about the formation change. So given the amount of time he was in there, I think he literally walked in and said, right, 4-2-3-1.
Sort it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or
it's good.
Thing in my head that I was wondering, he went Chelsea 2-1 down, 4-3-1 sorted out, and then walked out. That's what I hope he did.
Yeah,
it should be amazing.
Or he went in and went Sissoko's on,
Yeah, we went in and just went, oh,
for God's sake. Yeah, and then just walked out.
Yeah, I think it might have been, you know, on Football Manager when you click, like, ignore the players.
Yeah.
Change
yeah,
the formation and then click ignore.
But he was gutted about Winks, wasn't he? He seems to have invested a lot in Winks in the same way as he invested in Mason and Kane and Rose as well. I think he's really quite desperately sad about Winks missing the rest of the season. And I think as well, with something like that, we're in April now, there's a likelihood that he's probably going to miss pre-season, maybe. I know we do have weird injuries where they look like they're going to be out for a year and then they're back within sort of 7-8 weeks, but this does look like it might disrupt pre-season, so he's likely to miss America in July. Is that right?
That's the last week of July, I think. I mean, well, Kane did ankle ligaments and he was 8 weeks.
Yeah, this is what I mean, so, but it looked
it depends on the grade. If it's completely ruptured, that's what Jack Wilshere had problems with for years and years.
Oh, really?
And you're in big trouble.
Maybe.
Or it could be a couple
months. I don't know. The answer is, I think he was literally leaving the training ground at midday today when Poch was starting, and everyone saw him, and that he was, and then Poch said he's just going for the scans. He was on his way to hospital, so the club will know now. But they're probably, knowing them, they probably won't release it too.
And they'll lie anyway. So.
Yeah, it's, they probably won't release it for
as well.
It,
he's not there to make up numbers. This is going to be a genuine miss, isn't it?
Yeah,
for the rest of the season.
He spent the whole season integrating him into the squad, really. And you mentioned the players you mentioned, all academy products: Carroll, Mason, Bentaleb. Harry Winks is the reason that Pochettino let them leave. So it's a big shame, and I think what it might mean is more 4-2-3-1 with Dyer in midfield, because there's no one else who can really do that role and do a job. It'd be really interesting to see what Pochettino does in the big games. You'd think he'd just play the 3-4-3, really.
Well, we've got Swansea on Wednesday. I think we're likely to go back to 4-2-3-1. Do you think, Dan?
I guess I think it depends on Wanyama fitness.
Okay.
Yeah, so if he's fit, I can't see Poch switching from the three at the back.
So Walker's likely
to
return.
Then he'll push down into midfield.
I mean, the best thing about the 4-2-3-1 is, the three at the back is, we saw without Kane in October and November playing 4-2-3-1, it was so flat, so one-dimensional. The best thing about the new formation is Eriksen and Ali have so much space and they can do what they want, and you don't really want to take that away. So I think he'll probably, if Wanyama's available, he'll go three at the moment.
Yeah, and Walker's likely to be back, is that?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, it's just because Walker played for England and he doesn't normally do three in a week. And with the added thing of Trippier playing against his old club, I think it was kind of an easy decision to make.
Although, and of Trippier, the two games,
I thought Trippier had his worst game this season, actually.
Of the two games, Burnley. I think you'd choose Trippier to play against Burnley than you would against Swansea, who have got Olsen and possibly like Montero, who aren't going to terrify most players, but if you had a choice of who you're going to play,
yeah, actually, Montero, didn't he give Walker quite a hard time? Like,
and he was on the bench
on
Saturday. He's been back. He was out. He was out injured, and he was back on the bench. And I think it could genuinely be because of us on Wednesday.
And their game, I think Llorente's 50-50, isn't it? But their game is basically get it wide and swing it into Llorente as well. So you want to protect the.
Well, they played Borough on Sunday and it was one of the worst games of association football I have ever seen in my entire life. genuinely awful. They're right back in it as well, Swansea. So they've only won two of their last seven. I think they're level on points with Hull, or maybe now a point better off. They're right back in it, having kind of pulled away a little bit. So they're going to be scrapping. Is this the sort of game that after a really kind of a really good victory against Burnley, one that we probably maybe would have taken a draw in, is this the sort of game that could bring us crashing back down to earth a little bit if we're not careful?
We can't afford to drop any points. That's the problem, isn't it? I don't think we will either. I think they had their bounce after Paul Clement first came in, but they're the worst team Spurs have played this season. That home, they were so bad. Was it 5-0?
5-0. Yeah,
they were so bad in the 5-0. Like, they were worse than Hull. They were absolutely awful. So
they have got the worst defensive record in the league. Second worst, joint with Sunderland.
I think it'll suit us.
Isn't it?
The thing when you're playing teams that are fighting, just don't give them the chance. Don't open the door, which means if you score in the first 20 minutes, half an hour, especially with our defence, you can shut up, shop, counter-attack, you'll score a couple more and it's done. If you give them a sniff, if they take the lead or it was 0-0 after 60-70 minutes, a bit like the Sunderland game, us away at Sunderland, they've got something to play for. Just when you're playing a team that's fighting for relegation, just make sure they've got nothing to play
looking
for.
Looking back on that Sunderland game.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But that was kind of born of injuries, that formation.
Chelsea dropped points. They played Liverpool that week, didn't they? So
it's just one of those. I'm looking back on now, I'm like, why the fuck?
It was all, but then, because I think we asked the question, that was a game after Man City. And that game Poch lost faith in the 3-4-3, didn't he?
He didn't have a Tongan or Rose, did he?
Yeah, when Rose started against Sunderland, but he still started with a back four, and then Rose got injured and Davis came on, and he just didn't have any faith at all in Davis being a left wing back, which at the time was completely fair enough. He seems to have grown into it a bit better now, but this is the sort of game where he could probably look at it and go, well, I can trust Davis as a left wing back. Vertonghen's fit, Alderweireld's fit, Dyer's fit. If Wanyama's fit, then there's no reason not to go with a 3-4-3, is there?
No, and I think it's a better game for Spurs than the Burnley game, for instance, because Swansea do want to try and play. Like, Burnley's approach was pretty route one. Like, they had two strikers up there, and they're either trying to get Gray on the counter, kind of like Leicester did last season, where he's just using his pace to try and get beyond people, or they're trying to get it on the head of Ward or whoever else they have up there. Those are the two Burnley players I know well. But whereas Swansea will, they've Tom Carroll's pulling the strings now, isn't he?
We've got him in. We've mentioned him on every pod for the first week in ages. That's a legitimate reason to bring him up.
So Tom Carroll's, he suits them well because they do like to get the ball down a bit. So I think that kind of team, it shouldn't be a problem.
We always beat Swansea.
It's one of the best records we've got.
I think we've beaten them 9 out of the last 11. I think just remembering from the last time we did a preview on Swansea.
The last time we dropped points, Eriksen scored 2 free kicks.
Ah, that was my next question. Yeah. I was going to ask, what happened the last time that we played Swansea at Liverpool?
That was the last direct free kick.
We scored two in a game and he used it up. What happened to him? Don't know. Don't understand
it. He doesn't even beat the wall anymore. I feel like he's not practicing. I literally want to say to Pochettino, is Eriksen still practicing free kicks?
Why haven't you? See, this is why Greg's left. This is why Greg's left journalism. You're not asking the right question.
You just can't ask that kind of thing. Is Eriksen still... I suppose you could, actually.
That would have been a good preview question. You know, the last time that Eriksen scored a free kick was at the Liberty Stadium.
The problem is there's no one else who can really kick a ball.
Dyer can take one.
Apparently in training, Trippier's the one who sticks it in the top corner every time.
That's quite surprising because Trippier didn't take.
He's never taken one for
us. No, and Eriksen had a couple. Eriksen had a couple of free kicks against Burnley.
Crashed them into the wall.
Yeah, he
did. Very annoying.
So, maybe.
Okay.
Trippier's got the secret weapon. It is strange. But we did score from a corner for the first time in as long as I can remember.
It doesn't really count.
Yeah,
it does. That's the squawker talking in you.
There was that massive debate last. Was it this season about whether Spurs had conceded a goal from open play yet? Because Chadley stuck it in the back post against West Brom.
We'd half cleared it, like a
bouncing ball from a corner, and I was like, no, that is from open play. If it goes directly in from a corner, it's not from open play. It's from a corner kick.
Do you know what I mean? It's got to be a cross, header.
Or like a cross, flick on at the near post, head at the back post. Yeah. It can't like bounce around in the area a bit and then someone sticks it in. It's like, that was from the corner.
Because otherwise, where do you draw the line?
Defending from a corner, which led to a goal.
Yeah, quite right. We should also talk about Watford because we're going to play them as well before our next podcast. So Watford at home on Saturday. It's the early kickoff, is that right?
Yeah, 12:30.
Third game in a week. But arguably... I use that, I stress arguably, easiest of the three. Watford are 12th. Mazzarri is gone in the summer in all likelihood. They just beat Sunderland 1-0 at home in a game that they just didn't seem to really give a shit about. And it just so happens that Sunderland are bad enough to lose to anyone at home at the moment. They're on the beach, I think, at the moment, Watford. So,
well, who have they got midweek? We need them to ideally get another 3 points and then they'll really be on the beach.
Absolutely no idea. Should have looked into that.
Sorry,
I don't know. But
they're another team who were terrible last time we played them as well. So they might.
They were absolutely dreadful.
They were so bad that first half, wasn't it?
That was when Kane was just getting into form as well. We'd just beaten Southampton 4-1, isn't it?
So they've got West Brom tomorrow night.
Home or away?
At home.
Yeah, that's
a tough game. Yeah.
What West Brom are kind of on the beach. Like, get a point at Old Trafford, lose away at Watford is very West Brom, isn't it? I suppose. Mm. But they've won three games away from home all season. The last time they won was against Arsenal away from home, actually, when they beat them 2-1 when Cabal scored nine deflections yeah. free kick.
Yeah.
So there's I don't really know what to say about Watford, to be honest. I just
I'm not worried about Watford at all. I think it's just that's the you know, last year it always seemed to be Leicester would win and then Spurs would have to chase them actually.
Mm.
Like you said at the start of the pod, the actual opportunity if Chelsea drop points against City to the chance to get whether it's 1 point or 3 points or more to put some pressure on Chelsea before they play Bournemouth away, which isn't an easy game.
No, not at all.
Watford at home is a lot easier than Bournemouth away.
They've got some good points at home this season. I think they beat Liverpool, drew with us.
They kind of need the points as well. They're not really safe.
They can't defend, that's the problem. So Hazard will probably absolutely destroy them, but they can attack.
I think that what you can say about the next two games is that if Spurs drop points against Swansea or Watford, it's not because of what they've done, it's because Spurs will have fucked up. It's because they won't have played at their best, or there'd have been an individual mistake, or it would just been one of those horrible games like Newcastle last season that were kind of hard to explain. And I don't really see that happening.
No, fair enough. But we have those mitigating factors. We can point to if we lose out on the title by 4 points, four anywhere between 4 and 9 points, say, Kane's been out for what will eventually become 3.5-4 months of the season or so. Rose has been out for a long time as well. And I know, you know, if you're going to win the title, you need to be able to replace these players better. But it seems like this is something that nobody's really talking about. It's particularly in the media as well, when nobody's mentioning the fact that, all right, we've had injuries, every team's had injuries, but
Chelsea haven't.
Well, they're allowing United and allowing Liverpool to kind of get away scot-free a little bit, when considering we've had our spine has been out at some point this season. And somebody, I can't remember who tweeted it, somebody put together that our favoured formation of 3-4-3, the first 11, they've actually only started together twice this season, I think it was, though all those 11 players.
Chelsea at home.
West Brom at home.
Doesn't surprise me, yeah. And then Vertonghen got injured in that game.
In that game, exactly. Yeah. So we're looking at a team that has been ripped apart at various stages this season. And we're still second and we're in touch. We are in touch now. We're talking about a title now and it's just turned April. We don't get the credit that we deserve, do we?
And I think even if you take away Dyer and just do that back five of Lloris, Walker, Rose, Alderweireld and Vertonghen, they've started like five league games together.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah. So it's either Rose is out or Vertonghen's out or Alderweireld's out. It is really impressive. And actually, Spurs, I've been saying it all year, but Spurs squad is pretty shite as well.
Yeah.
Like on top of that, the fact is, they bought horribly in the summer, and actually, no one would be that surprised if. You know, if Levy's pragmatic, you know, like he was in the summer when Paulinho went and Soldado went, when he obviously just decided he was going to get rid of them and potentially take a loss. If he takes a similar view this summer, which I think he should, then there's a good chance that he'll sell Janssen, Sissoko and Nkudu for a lot less than Spurs pay for them.
Let me ask you, because this ties into one of the listener questions that we've got. So Gavin Lewis at Spursy_Gav. Has our ability to deal with injuries been a result of squad depth or the versatility of a core group of players?
Good question, Gav. I reckon more the latter.
Yeah.
But when you look at the versatility, so who have we had to rely on to be versatile to...
Well, Son and Dyer, for one thing.
Eriksen, I suppose, as well, a little bit.
Because Son has been the, as I said, he's like the 12th man. So when the strikers, when Kane's injured, he comes in up front. And when someone from midfield can't play, he comes into the midfield.
Mm.
And similarly, Dyer, when Vertonghen was out, he moved back into defence. And presumably if Wanyama's out on Wednesday, he'll go back into midfield. So,
And I guess who in the squad has played a significant amount of games? You can only look at Son being that. And Davis, yeah,
The last couple of months. But... You know exactly the players Pochettino's trust, and he didn't trust Davis before Danny Rose got injured. He wasn't getting a sniff. I think he actually rates Trippier more than he rates Ben Davis, to be honest. But I mean, I think that's p- part of the reason we've got the... I don't want to sound like that, the Dutch guy, the egg on Twitter.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the reason we've got the injuries in the first place, because he didn't really trust the squad and they were getting pushed so hard, particularly in the autumn when Alderweireld and Kane were getting injured. And obviously they're freak injuries. They're, you know, turning an ankle, Vertonghen turning an ankle on the sideline. But I think the players were pushed quite hard. And we know Pochettino, he's into that periodization kind of stuff. You know, they're always looking at players in the red zone. That's exactly why Kyle Walker didn't play on Saturday. But I think some of them were pushed quite hard because there weren't the alternative in the squad. And Harry Kane's one of them as well. You know, there are games when I'm sure he would have liked to give Kane a little rest. And it's really difficult with a striker, especially when they're on form.
How much then in the way that we've changed formation through this season, you mentioned earlier about how Ali and Eriksen have got so much more freedom in a 3-4-3. And that's only really come about because of the formation change. And in the same way as Davis now getting minutes is purely through necessity. I mean, they didn't really have him as a left-back before Rose got injured and before the formation change. He certainly wasn't having him as a left-wing back. And he's only just come into a little bit of form now. But if we didn't have a squad depth before the formation change, we're almost worse set now. Is that fair to say? Like...
I think we're getting by, to be honest. Yeah. I think we're getting by in spite of the injuries rather than showing off our squad. You look at Man United's squad and the players they could leave out of their match day 18 if everyone was fit. It's absolutely ridiculous. Same with Arsenal, really. And certainly with Chelsea and the youngsters they've got as well. I think we're just getting by. We're muddling through without Kane and Rose at the moment. I don't think we've got players really stepping up to the plate and taking responsibility. What we've got is Eriksen's found his form after a horrible 3 months at the start of the season, and Ali's playing at his best at the moment. I think he's our most important player at the moment.
He is. He's kind of, now Kane's out, he's kind of stepped up as the sort of poster boy of Tottenham, and he's delivering at like the big moments. I think, yeah, that cross for Son and Burnley was, I think you said it was kind of Bale-esque.
It's the arrogance of Bale, of knowing
the way he just knowing kind of stepped into
you can pull something off that, you know, a lot of players probably could but would never even dream of trying, you know, maybe at 4-0 up or something, but it was pinpoint and it was like half volley across the face of goal. Like, it, I mean, Bale used to do it once a game.
To go back to that scored ladder thing, like, I put Dyer at 11 and I put Kane at 1 and Ali at 2, but then the funny thing about that was is literally from 3 to 10 it could have been anyone. Like, but a lot of people would say Alderweireld was the third most important player. Other people would say it's Dembele. Other people would say it's Rose or Walker or even Vertonghen. It's like there are a lot of... There's not much to choose between Spurs' first 11 and its quality. And then as soon as one of them's out, the quality drops off quite dramatically. But you've still got kind of 7 or 8 players of a really high level in there who are match winners. So, yeah, I think muddling through is a kind of good way to put it. And the challenge for Spurs is to... sort of fine players who were closer to the level of the first 11. I mean, Sissoko, I mean, man, his first touch.
he was so bad.
He
sliced that one into the stand, but even before that, the ball would go into him and it just bounced up
can't
into the air.
Control
can
it?
Can I just defend him slightly?
yeah, go ahead.
I think it wasn't anything that he did, but I do think his introduction changed a lot of how we approached the game. So we had no pace in the first half. We had no Rose, no Walker, and no Son on the pitch. And there are three speedsters, if you like. With none of them on the pitch, we had no pace whatsoever. And he didn't do that much, Sissoko, or what he did do was a war crime. But but he did at least push them back and he gave Trippier some space. And I think that we scored from...
Why Pochettino signed him.
I think he was awful. But I do think that he had an impact on the game. And if that's his lasting legacy at Spurs, the Burnley 2-0... To turn our season around and win the title.
In which
then
he neither got a goal nor assist, but had a good impact.
It's all psychological.
He did have a good impact. Psychological. But you're right, he did. There were a couple of balls in behind, at least, that he ran after and didn't get. But he was like,
oh, Jesus.
That was about it, really. It's dreadful
football. Let's do a minute on Janssen, because...
He was terrible, too.
So, okay, so I was going back with Ben Pierce, and like he was saying he thought Janssen was much improved, and... And he'd been sort of tweeting throughout the game, Janssen much improved, and he'd been getting a load of Spurs fans kind of replying, saying, oh, you're just kind of bigging him up, you're desperately seeking the positives, blah, blah. And I've been tweeting, Janssen's been absolute crap. And I was getting a load of Spurs fans tweeting back saying, no, he's been much improved. It's just like, we weren't really sure what was going on. My view is essentially that I think Spurs fans are great because they're desperate for strikers to succeed, but I sort of feel like we're in Soldado territory here, where if he just completes a pass, everyone's like, recovery, he's great.
There was quotes today saying, I think they were asking him about, I think it might have been Ben.
It was Ben
Pierce,
yeah,
actually,
yeah,
interviewed
Ben,
him,
yeah.
And said, "Are you? Do you think you'll be here next season?" It was a very, we'll see.
It was quite,
I don't think
he'll
have much choice, to be honest.
Yeah.
He's just not good enough, really. And it's technically, there are a couple of times in the first half, especially, where there's a chance to counter-attack and a bad touch just slows it down completely, and then Burnley reset.
He almost looked like he wasn't quite quick enough to like keep up with Eriksen and Ali when they had the ball. And when he didn't have the ball,
he doesn't get his head up either.
No, he can't. He just cannot do the same job that we need him to, that Kane can. And it's unfair to compare him directly to Kane, who is a world-class striker. It's unfair to compare anyone to him, really. But he doesn't seem to be able to do the basic things that a central striker should be able to do.
I rewatched Match of the Day, and there was one really good thing he did where Davis kind of knocked the ball into him, and he was quite kind of patient, and he played it back to Davis.
That's the thing he's good at, though,
yeah,
when he uses his massive arse and he just
Davis plays his little one.
But that's the thing. It was good, but it's all back to goal. Like his best work is always, always, always with his back to goal. And that was the same at the start of the season when, you know, before his confidence crashed, he did look like quite a handy kind of hold-up man and build-up man and whatever. But it was always like 20, 30 yards from goal, ball into him, little layoff to someone else or a quick pass. It's like, that's great. But first of all, I think that's the bare minimum a striker should be doing. Mm. Second of all, it's just not a goal threat at all.
Mm.
It was sort of like Soldado all over again. We were like, oh, well, you know, he's actually quite a good right back.
I saw it stand by. I think Janssen is the reverse Pavlyuchenko in that does everything but score and get himself into a good position. And that's basically all that Pav did for his entire Spurs career. Made a career out of bumbling through but scoring goals. Do you know what I mean?
He can finish it.
Yeah,
in the top corner every now and then.
Yeah,
and I've seen Janssen do that for Holland, which is the kind of frustrating thing. He scored a goal like in October, I think, where he sort of just
drove
at the defence and properly whacked in the top corner. It's like, that was, you know, he's facing goal. If we saw a bit more of that at Spurs, I'd be more convinced, but I just don't know if he's able to do that in the Premier League.
I mean, there aren't that many great second-choice strikers out there. Mitchell Batshuayi at Chelsea, what's he doing?
Mm.
I don't even know who Arsenal's Welbeck, Giroud,
that Perez
they're
guy.
All the
yeah.
Perez. They're all the same level. Man United have got Rashford, which is a great option. He's playing on the wing a lot of the time. I think that's probably what Spurs need to do: buy a winger who can play up front.
But we've got one. We've got Son.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when Kane was injured a few weeks ago, Pochettino said a similar thing in his press conference, and it was more or less to the effect of, you know, all these second strikers are struggling. It's not easy for any of them, and I think the underlying suggestion was actually Son's as good as any second striker in the whole league. And I think that's
15
true. If you look at his goals,
tells you everything you need to know. Really.
I mean, 12 in the league, I think, or 11 in the league and 6 in the FA Cup. Like, I suppose when the FA Cup, they've probably got Son to thank.
Mm.
He always sort of came up with the goods in against those lower league teams.
Yeah, fair enough. I want to finish, because you something that you wanted to add to the running order, but I think you were talking about the Pochettino interview or the presser that he did when he was talking about Dembele in the
last week's one.
Just it's a nice thing to finish on, because I don't think he really got the credit that he deserved when he came on against Burnley. I think that Dyer was obviously great, but Dembele was unplayable really in a similar way as he's been unplayable for most of the last 2 years or so. Do you think Pochettino was comparing him to Maradona? So
it was quite nice. It was nice. Quote, he said, it's the kind of thing that as a journalist, when you hear it, you're like, yes,
that's our line. That's
result.
Line. That's Friday's line.
That's the line, lads. But he said he'd met five geniuses in his career who he's worked with, and it was Dembele, Maradona, Okocha, Ronaldinho, and Ivan De La Pena.
Yeah.
And
who's that? Don't know who that is.
He was like quite a classy Espanyol. Well. He had a couple of caps for Spain. Yeah, former Barcelona. Really good, like midfield playmaker.
So he was good. He wasn't
little
just clutches a bit weird.
Yeah, he was good.
yeah, he was great.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
And
sorry, who were you? I was Maradona.
Maradona, Ronaldinho, JJ Okocha, and then Bele. So
yeah.
Like,
yeah, okay, yeah.
I mean, you sort of see, it gives you an insight into sort of the type of player that Pochettino respects. Skillful, often a midfielder. Good dribbler, got tricks, good on the ball, which is funny because, you know, he was like an uncompromising centre-half. But it made me think, you hear a hell of a lot of stuff about players who have either played with or against Dembele or managers who have been in the dugout when he's playing. And loads of them say, he's the best player I've ever played against. Yeah. Or he's the hardest ever opponent. And I feel like he's the kind of player that when you're on the terraces or watching at home, you just can't appreciate how fucking difficult it is to get the ball off him.
Yeah.
Like you know when you play someone in like Sunday League or five-a-side and they're just so much stronger than you in the upper body and you can't get near them? I feel like for the average Premier League footballer who's used to bullying people, that's what Dembele is. They just can't get it off him.
We're going to see on Wednesday Tom Carroll versus Moussa Dembele, which I think has always been the dream, has it not?
it's a complete mismatch.
Yeah, it could be quite scary. I thought we should have talked about that because
it was
a nice
one. I mean,
didn't he say something like, if I'd have got my hands on him at 19?
That's the most interesting thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He said,
yeah.
I wish I... Because, you know, he has sort of... He drifted quite... I think Pochettino would have sold him after his first season.
Yeah, he was nowhere near the team, was he?
He drifted quite...
Another great thing was Pochettino sort of tried to rewrite history on that as well. Like, he was like, oh yeah, he had a lot of injuries in the first season, which is bollocks. He played 3 games in a row. He made a mistake against West Ham, if you remember.
Tried
to dribble it out from his own
area.
He played
in the North London derby, didn't he? And he was awesome.
Yeah.
But then
he made a mistake and then he didn't start again until the final day. He went 14 games without a start. So basically Pochettino bombed him out. But he's trying to claim that he was injured. Sorry, carry on.
But also, he does... With Dembele, Pochettino, you wouldn't think would have a lot of patience for a player who can't last 90 minutes.
Mm.
But with Dembele, he does. He knows he's going to have to take him off after 75 minutes, but he does it anyway because he rates him that highly.
A weird kind of luxury player that Spurs just aren't used to. It's usually Ginola and Van der Vaart of overweight fame. You know, it's totally different.
I think he's underrated defensively as well because he uses that strength so well to take the ball off people. Mm. You know, and also just... If you're counter-attacking, just you beat one player and then it can open the game up so quickly, especially if you've got your flying fullbacks or you've got Ali and he starts attacks. He's never, you know, he's not getting assists or goals, but it's pretty clear that's not his game now. But the importance of starting attacks is massive.
We've mentioned it before. I mean, when he got people used to call him Dr. Dembele.
Yeah.
When he received the ball when facing his own goal, one of the fullbacks would give him the ball. They'd be in their own third still, and within 2 seconds he's turned his
marker. And you don't worry
he's
that he's going to lose it, do you?
No.
You don't worry that someone's up him, we're under pressure, they're going to nick it. And
I tell you, I think Wanyama's turning into that as well, and I've got to find maybe they've worked together, or Dembele's kind of teaching tricks to him, because I kind of feel like Wanyama's started to do that a little bit. He's facing his own goal, and within 2 touches, he's turned a defender, and he's already... making his way into the opposition.
I think it was fairly noticeable with Burnley, actually, that when Winks plays, Winks is great, but he's not quite as trusted to get the ball when he's got 3 or 4 men on him. Like, the Alderweireld and Vertonghen would literally pass to Dembele when he's got 2 men behind him, because they know that he's not going to fuck up.
Yeah.
He will probably just turn them.
Mm.
Whereas I think they're a little bit more reluctant to go into Winks in a similar position. They'd rather go wide because he's not, you know, he's not there yet. So that's just the kind of little thing that, you know, as good as Winks is on the ball, it's kind of about what Dembele can bring to the team. You just trust him completely.
Yeah. He's not about numbers, is he, Dembele? It's everything but, I suppose, isn't it? Anyway, let's round this up because you are gagging for a piss, aren't you, Dan?
I'm just squirming in my seat.
Yeah, you are a bit. Greg, thanks so much for joining us again.
Cheers,
good
mate.
Luck with the cricket. Totally different sea change for you there. But yeah, best of luck with that, mate. Dan, keep up the football journalism. a couple of years, you'll give it up, mate.
I'm looking for a new job already.
Yeah. All right, thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.